like to take the opportunity to welcome everyone to the official beginning of the new year, even though we had a couple of shiurim already in Elul and preceding Rosh Hashanah, but officially this is the kickoff of the new year, so I'd like to give everyone a shukayah for coming in the hope that it will be the year of Hatzlacha. First and foremost, I have to make a little disclaimer here in case people were misled by the title of the shiur, that today we're going to speak about the halachas that are involved with the international dateline. So I just want to clarify that the international dateline is not a matrimonial service that is provided for people who are looking to get married. It has nothing to do with that. But rather, the international dateline is something which, as we all know, is a part of the reality of the world, and presents a very fascinating study of halacha and a number of challenges as well. And I would like to, I'm indebted to Rabbi Yaakov Flamholtz, who provided me with a great deal of material that was beneficial to this year. Okay, basically what we have to understand, earth science was never my strength, I must admit. However, we can all agree today the world is established as fact, something which was once upon a time debated, and that is that the world is round. This we know. And thus, we know that the sun rises and sets in different places at different times. So, for example, we know that we have the time zones. We know here in the United States, essentially, there are four time zones. And we have the eastern zone, which we are in, and then you have central and the mountain zone, and then the Pacific. What has been agreed upon by all the countries of the world, there are several realities in calculating days and dates, and obviously it's in everyone's best interest all over the world that there should be some uniform way of calculating the dates. And therefore there have been several understandings that were reached by the nations of the world. First and foremost, everyone has agreed that the new day begins at midnight, the secular day begins at midnight. Once it hits 12 o'clock midnight, it is already the next day, even though it is pitch black outside, and you'll say, well, it's still the night, it was the night a few minutes ago, and it still is the night, obviously, but from a technical standpoint, the new day has begun once you cross over midnight. This is something which is agreed upon all over the world. Obviously, the halacha, right, the Jews don't follow that principle in halacha because we have the concept that the day begins with the beginning of the night. The new day begins with the beginning of the night, which is why Shabbos begins on Friday night and so forth. Every Yom Tov is like that. And so too, Shabbos ends at the time of the Tzeis Kol Chavim on Shabbos. So yesterday we ended Shabbos somewhere in the time between 7 and 7:30 p.m. or around there, between 7 and 8 p.m. Whereas the Saturday did not end until midnight. Right? In other words, the secular Saturday began at midnight on Friday night when we were already well into the observance of Shabbos. And the secular Saturday did not end until midnight last night when we were already past the Havdalah. Okay, so this is these are Dvarim Pshutim. Everyone understands that the Halacha goes by a different set of rules, but in the secular world, all nations have accepted this as a standard. Theoretically, it didn't have to be that way, but this is the time that everyone has agreed upon. Now, that being the case, so we could imagine in our mind that if a person is traveling the world and is starting, let's say, from Miami and going west, so tonight at midnight it's going to become Monday. Once the clock hits 12, tonight it's going to be Monday. But yet, west of here, let's say in Chicago, at that time that we already say it's Monday, it is still Sunday at 11 p.m. If you go to Denver, it is still Sunday at 10 p.m. If you go to Los Angeles, it is still Sunday at 9 p.m. If you go to Hawaii, it's even earlier. And as you make your way around the globe going west, it keeps getting earlier and earlier. And obviously, as anyone who ever thought this through will realize, there's going to come a point that if you go all the way around the globe until you are one zone, you are one zone continuing west, one zone before you will arrive back in Miami, which another way of saying that is if you would be one zone east of Miami, 23 zones west of Miami. So when in Miami it's midnight Sunday night, there it's going to be 1 o'clock in the morning of, in other words, tonight at midnight it's officially going to be Monday. But 23 time zones to the west of here, theoretically, it's going to be 1 o'clock in the morning of Sunday morning. Because as you go west, it keeps getting earlier and earlier. Which would mean that if you kept going one more zone to the west and you arrived back in Miami, it should theoretically end up that now it is midnight, not of Sunday night slash Monday, but rather Saturday night slash Sunday. Meaning that when you arrive back in Miami, you're going to have the question, what day is this? Right? In other words, it's going to be midnight again. But all the previous, as you continued to west, you kept getting earlier and earlier into the day. If you keep following that through, when you arrive back at Miami, so you'll say, well, it's even an hour earlier, which means now it is midnight of Saturday night. It is now Sunday. But yet we know that, in fact, it is midnight of Sunday night going into Monday. Which means, and I know this is confusing, obviously, to everyone, including myself, but the reality is that if you think it through, there has to be a point that cuts off. There has to be a place somewhere in the world where you say that when you cross this line, you are crossing into the next day. It has to be. Meaning that somewhere west of where we are, there has to be a point that is determined to be that at once you cross this line, you're crossing into the next day. So therefore, when you wherever that line is going to be, where you were previously, it was Sunday. As soon as you cross that line, it's going to be Monday. That is a reality that is built into the fact that the world is round and we have the different time zones. So the question is, where is this point? So the history of this is, the look in the encyclopedia, you will see that in the secular world, this problem was not perceived until the 16th century. It is mentioned that when Magellan in the 1500s went on one of his expeditions and he continued traveling west, 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 so he circumvented the world or a lot going west, and thus everywhere he traveled, they kept keeping track of the time. And when they arrived back in Spain, where they had set out from, they were under the impression that it was Tuesday because the place that they had logged a while earlier in their trip, it was Tuesday. But when they arrived back, they were told that it is Wednesday. So this was very hard for them to understand. How could that be? According to our records, it should be a day earlier, and you're telling us it's a day later. So this was a very big problem. They sent the Shiloh, it's mentioned in the encyclopedia that they sent the Shiloh to the Pope to get some sort of explanation. It's unclear what the explanation that he gave was, but the reality was that this was because of the fact that the world is round. At that point, it still was not clear to people that the realities of the world being round. So this was the situation. In the late 1800s, the nations of the world, or the leading nations of the world, gathered together in some conference and decided that there has to be a point that we all agree upon is the cutoff, is going to be the dateline that everybody agrees on. Everyone will agree that when you cross this line, you are crossing into the new day. When you go west of this line, you are crossing into the new day. The question is, who is going to have the schus, which country or which part of the world, which time zone is going to be zocha to have this great distinction that they are the ones we cross the line? So it was agreed upon, arbitrarily, it was agreed upon that there should be one place that everyone agrees, it would be called the International Dateline. And if you refer to the map that was handed out, the civil dateline is a line which falls in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, pretty much clear of any landmass, which is why they picked it. They didn't want it to have, they didn't want to have a situation. Obviously, you could have a terrible situation here where if you draw the line in the middle of a landmass, so you could have two people on opposite sides of the streets, and that's two different dates. Right? In other words, if theoretically they would have agreed that Miami Gardens Drive is the international, be on one side of the street today, you know, would be perhaps still Shabbos, and on the other side it would be Sunday, or it would be Sunday and Monday. So in an effort to avoid this from happening, they picked a spot which was pretty much in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It wasn't a perfect location. There is no perfect location. If you look at the map, there's nowhere that you could go right down from top to bottom and avoid any landmass. So they arranged that it would zigzag a little bit, right, that it'll, you know, in order to keep life simple for everybody. So when they came to the Aleutian Islands, they had to extend it a little bit west, and so forth, and that way when they came in the area of New Zealand, they had to extend the line east. But that was the agreement. When you cross this line, you are crossing into a new day, and thus, as everyone realizes, a person traveling from the United States, let's say, to China, to Japan, or Australia, will be crossing over this line. Right? The reality is that before you had airplane travel, it was not such a big issue for most people, because how often did this happen? That people would travel, or certainly for Americans, it wasn't an issue, because when would you really end up going there? And if you went there, you know, it was a rare occurrence. But today, with the fact that we have airplanes and the fact that we have a global economy, so it is very common that people travel from the United States to the Orient or to Australia, and thus, when you're doing that, you are crossing into a new day, and it presents also certain logistical challenges, but any person who's a businessman who makes this trip is used to this and you know, has his way of dealing with it. The question that we're going to deal with today is, where is this line in halacha? Now, if being that the day of the week is something which is very crucial, the date is something which is very crucial to us, right? Determining whether right now is Sunday or Monday or Shabbos is something which is very important because of the observance of Shabbos, right? And so too the observance of Yontif. We will see that there are other considerations in halacha as well. So we have to know, where is the line? Now, the line that the world holds, the international line, was arbitrarily determined. It was not based on any ancient wisdom or any source of, you know, any source of knowledge, but rather it was just that you have to cut it off somewhere, so why not do it in a place where it should be convenient for most people? That's what the secular convention held, which makes a lot of sense. But the question is that line recognized in halacha? So this presents a very, very fascinating discussion and a study of halacha to see that does the halacha have a place that it would technically consider to be the international dateline, or does the halacha simply go by what the arbitrary line that the secular world has? So here it gets complicated. As far as looking for sources, the poskim searched high and low for sources on this. Now again, in the halacha, really did not become, it was not really much of a shaila until the early 1900s. They say, I think the first recorded time that this shaila was asked was in the years of World War I, where certain Jews were running away from Europe and ran to Japan. And this is in the World War I era, and they wanted to know when they go into Japan, so they're crossing the international dateline, right? In other words, let's say they're going from Europe, so you're going from where they were running to Japan, so they were not actually crossing the line. Right? In other words, if you look at the map, right, on the day that it would have been Shabbos in Eastern Europe or whatever part of Europe they were running from, so as they go to Japan, they are still on the same side of the line. And therefore, the day that is held to be Saturday in Japan would have been, they if the secular wine is halachic, so then it's the same day. Okay, very good. So it's Shabbos in Japan, it's Shabbos here too. However, they had reason to suspect that the halachic wine was not in the same location. And the basis for this is a little complicated. There's a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. I didn't put it on the sheet because it's, you don't really see it clearly from the Gemara. It is really developed in the analysis of the Gemara by one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Zerachia Halevi, known as the Baal Hamor, who, in his interpretation of the Gemara, as we will see in a moment, came up with an international dateline. It's interesting to note that the Baal Hamor lived in the 13th century, which was several 14th century, which is several hundred years before Magellan had his expedition, and before from the recorded history that we have, before the secular world perceived that there was an issue and perceived that there's a need for an international dateline, we already find a statement in one of the Rishonim in his commentary to the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which tells us clearly that there is such a thing as a dateline. There is such a place in the world that is going to be a cutoff dateline, which would point to the fact that the Mesorah that the Klal Yisrael had from going back from Har Sinai includes a lot of scientific facts that might not have been known to the world until much later. Right? Human discovery, it took people time to discover a lot of things because it was based on need. And until the world got to the point that anybody had the ability to travel around the world going west, it didn't dawn on anybody that there should be a need for a dateline. But yet we find that several hundred years earlier, is clearly stated in one of the Rishonim, that there is such a thing as a dateline. Where did he get this from? So, you bear with me here. The Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah says the following. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that Rosh Chodesh, where it discusses when Bezdin proclaims Rosh Chodesh, and it says that Bezdin cannot pronounce a certain day as Rosh Chodesh unless the Molad, unless the new moon, appeared before noon of that day. In other words, if the Molad appeared before noon of that day, then you could proclaim that day as Rosh Chodesh, and if not, then that day cannot be Rosh Chodesh. And the Gemara proceeds to explain that the reason for this is because they derive from a pasuk that Rosh Chodesh can only be established if somewhere in the world that Rosh Chodesh will be for 24 hours. The Gemara derives this from a pasuk. This is disputed amongst the Rishonim whether that in fact is what you see from the pasuk. But in the opinion of the Baal Hamor, the pasuk teaches us that Rosh Chodesh can be established in the Bezdin, in the Sanhedrin of Yerushalayim, only at a point where there is somewhere in the world, wherever it may be, that the Rosh Chodesh will be 24 hours. In other words, if Rosh Chodesh is established, let's say at 11 o'clock in the morning, which was the case, you know, Bezdin, the Sanhedrin did not meet at night, so anytime Rosh Chodesh, you know, was proclaimed, Rosh Chodesh was only for a limited period of time. Today, that we have a set calendar, so we always begin Rosh Chodesh from the night before. Right, this past Thursday night, when we went to Ma'ariv, so they gave a clap on the table and announced, "Say Al V'Yavo," because it's going to be Rosh Chodesh. But in the time that you had the Sanhedrin Yerushalayim, Rosh Chodesh was proclaimed in the daytime. Right? And Rosh Chodesh ended at night. So Rosh Chodesh was never more than a certain amount of hours in Yerushalayim. However, the Gemara tells us that there was a requirement that even though it may be limited in Eretz Yisrael, but it has to be established at such a time that somewhere in the world they will be able to have Rosh Chodesh, that it will be Rosh Chodesh for 24 hours. That it will be a full day of Rosh Chodesh from sunset to sunset the next day. Now, the Gemara says that being that is the case, the Rosh Chodesh could not be established past noon of any given day. Which means, now, if we do a little thinking here, it's a little complicated, but noon of a day in Halacha is 18 hours after the day began. Right? In Halacha. Right? In the secular calculation, noon of a day is exactly halfway through the day. The day began at midnight, and whatever time, let's say it's today, Sunday, whatever today's date is, October the 30th, I believe. Sunday, October the 30th, began at 12:01 last night. Right? So when we hit that point today in the afternoon, 12:01, it will be 12 hours into the day. But in the halacha, the noon, what we call chatzos, is not at 12 o'clock. Right? The chatzos is you take the hours of the day and divide them up, and it ends, you make a calculation when chatzos is. Okay? But whenever chatzos is going to be, whatever specific time on the calendar it's going to be 18 hours after the day began, for the simple reason that in the halacha, the day goes from night to night, from the beginning of the night to the beginning of the next night. So that means from the beginning of the night until the halachic midnight is 6 hours, from the halachic midnight till the halachic noon is 12 hours, and therefore, when you stand and the halachic noon, whatever time chatzos is, it is 18 hours, it is 18 halakhic hours after this halakhic day has begun. Now, that, think about that, you'll see that it works out. Now, if that is so, and the Gemara tells us that the latest time Rosh Chodesh could be established would be at noon, and the reason for that is because there has to be somewhere in the world that Rosh Chodesh is, at least one place in the world that Rosh Chodesh can be observed for 24 hours. So that means what? So we have to ask ourselves, why can't you go past noon? Why can't you go past noon? What's the difference? If Rosh Chodesh is 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, what's the difference? Somewhere in the world, Rosh Chodesh will be 24 hours. So apparently, the reason for that is because noon, which is 18 halakhic hours after the day begins, right, means that when you go 18 hours west of Yerushalayim, if you cross over one more zone, it's not going to be Rosh Chodesh anymore. Why not? Because it's going to be the next day. Meaning that the fact that the halacha limits us to the noon cutoff, meaning that that you have 18 hours into the day. 18 hours into the day is when it's considered, 18 hours into the Yerushalayim day, right? At noontime Yerushalayim, it's 18 hours since the day began. And the halacha is telling us that it's at that time, once you go past that time, there is not going to be anywhere in the world that Rosh Chodesh is going to be 24 hours. Why is that? Why should that be? So if you think it through, you will see that the reason for this is because if you would continue going one more zone to the west, it wouldn't be Rosh Chodesh anymore, it would be the next day. So thus, based on this complex understanding of the Gemara, it was determined by the Baal Amor that in the 13th century, it was determined that the halakhic international dateline is 18 zones west of Yerushalayim. Another way of looking at it would be 6 zones east of Yerushalayim, right? And therefore, it would come out that point, and if you refer back to the map, you will see that this opinion of the Baal Amor was adapted and promulgated greatly by the Chazon Ish, which we'll discuss in a moment, right? So if you look here, what the map shows as line B, right? So line B is, if you look from where Eretz Yisrael is, which is by line A, you will see that six time zones to the east of Eretz Yisrael, or 18 time zones to the west, if you want to go the other direction, is where it was determined by the Baal Amor is the day that the halacha considers to be the cutoff. It's the point in the day that the halacha considers to be the cutoff. This is his opinion. And this came halacha l'maisa, the Chazon Ish, who we know today is revered as one of the great poskim of the previous generation. But the people who, if you've ever read the biography or asked people who knew the Chazon Ish, you will hear that the Chazon Ish was largely unknown when he lived, he was not a Rosh Hashiva, he was not a Rav, he basically stayed to himself and learned for himself for many years of his life, and was only known to be a Gadol Batorah to a handful of people. A limited number of people knew that there existed somewhere there's such a person who was a very, very great scholar, but he wasn't well known because he didn't have any position. But the rabbis of the Mir Yeshiva in the World War II era knew of him. And when the yeshiva made its escape from Europe, when they were able to, b'chasdei Hashem, escape from the Nazis by getting visas that took them into the Orient, so they found themselves in the year 1941, before they ended up in Shanghai. Everyone knows, very famous, that the Mir Yeshiva ended up in Shanghai, but that was only, they were there for most, it was a six-year period that they spent in the Orient. Most of those years was spent in Shanghai. But the first year was not. The first year was spent in Japan, in a place called Kobe, Japan, K-O-B-E. In Kobe, Japan, that's where they were. Now, if you look at the map, you will see that being in Kobe, Japan, which I made an X at the approximate location of where that would be, presents a challenge, because Kobe, Japan, or any of Japan for that matter, is in between the civil dateline and what might be construed as the halakhic dateline. And therefore, the students of the Mir Yeshiva had a question that on the day, right now, the residents of Japan who subscribe to the international dateline, right, so being where it is, so they held that a certain day was Saturday. Now, someone who was not tuned into the situation, who would fly there, who would arrive there, would travel there, would say, okay, well, whenever they say it's Saturday, it's Shabbos. But that's not true if you crossed over the line. Because if you cross the international date line from west to east, so then it becomes a day earlier. So if the date line in halacha is where the secular world claims it is, then Saturday is Shabbos. However, if it is where the Baal HaMor claims it is, right, the Baal HaMor claims that it is on this diagram on line B, which means that Saturday is not Shabbos, right? They consider it Saturday, but Saturday is really Friday. Sunday is Shabbos. Why? Because in the opinion of the Baal HaMor, when this group of the Mir Yeshiva left Europe, they crossed the line. When you cross the line east, you're going back in time. You're going to a day earlier. But the secular world did not recognize that as the line. So therefore, on the day that the newspapers in Japan would say today is Saturday, the followers of the Baal HaMor's opinion would say, no, it's not, it's Friday. It's Friday because we crossed the line. It's Saturday in Europe. Yes, it is. In other words, back where we were, right? That's on the same side of the line. That everybody agrees. But where we are now, we have crossed over into a day earlier. And therefore, they had a big question, when should they observe Shabbos? Because which what do you go by? Do you go by what the Baal HaMor said? Maybe there's another opinion. We'll soon see there is another opinion. So the question is, what day is Shabbos? And which presents a lot of difficulties, because we know that we have a basic rule in halacha, which is Safek Daraisa L'Chumrah, which means that if you have a Torah law and you have a doubt about it, you have to be machmir. Okay, so when it comes to doing any of the 39 forms of work of Malacha on Shabbos, such as cooking, such as writing, things like that. So now, if you have a doubt, any sort of halakhic doubt, you have to be strict. Well, if you have a doubt what day it is, then you also have to be strict, which would mean that they would have to observe Shabbos possibly for 2 days. And of course, the problem got worse when it came to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur also being the one and only fast that is mandated by the Torah. So again, you would have to be strict. Right? Had it been Tisha B'Av or any of the other Taneisim, so you'll say, well, this is a rabbinic innovation, a rabbinic institution, and there we have the rule Safik Rabbanu Lukula, and perhaps there's room to be more lenient. But when you're dealing with Yom Kippur, you can't play games, so you have to be strict. So it would come out that you're going to have to fast 2 consecutive days, which is not something that anybody was really looking forward to. So the rabbis of the Mir Yeshiva were aware of this man, Rabbi Avram Yeshaya Karelitz, and they sent the Shaila to him. They felt he was the top authority in Halacha. They sent the Shaila to him, and he said, based on the statement of the Baal Amor, his comment to the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that the line is where it is drawn here on the sheet, line B, and therefore Japan being east of that line is a day earlier, and when they cross that line, they're going back into the previous day. And therefore, the day that is held by the Japanese people to be Shabbos is really Friday, and the day held by the Japanese people to be Sunday is Shabbos. This is what he told them to do, and so too with Yom Kippur, the calculation would be made in the same manner, that it would be based on the fact that this is the one. This is what he said. Now, if you study this, if you look at this line, you know, you will see, you'll say to yourself, oh, wait a second, this is crazy. The international line, even though it's arbitrary, but at least has the benefit that it doesn't fall out in the middle of any landmass. But the Chazon Ish's line, going right down the middle, bisects almost perfectly, right? You have here Russia, Indonesia, Australia, are all cut off by the line. Which means that you could, in fact, according to the Chazon Ish, get into the situation that you have two people on two opposite sides of the streets, and for one person it's Friday, and for the other person it's Shabbos. And therefore, if for a certain week you felt it was very difficult for you to observe Shabbos, you would have a very simple solution: cross the street, right? And then you'll observe Shabbos for 1 minute, right? Wait till Shabbos begins, cross the street, and Shabbos is over, right? On the other hand, if a person crossed the other way, right, that would be a very fascinating way of dealing with things. On the other hand, if you crossed it the other way, you can get into a situation where Shabbos is over and now just started. You just made Abdullah, and I have to make Kiddush again. So, obviously, this presents a great deal of difficulty. So, the truth be told, there were poskim who, in fact, held that, well, that's just the way it is. And yeah, you could have a situation like that. But the Chazon Ish was not comfortable with this. And based on a certain principle in halacha, which I don't fully understand, he said that the line also has to be a little bit zigzag, meaning that any landmass that the line falls out in the middle of is considered west of the line. And therefore, therefore, even though you have, let's say, on this map where it says Russia, it's cut off, right, the line goes down the middle, but halachically, if the line would go around it, and therefore all of that country would be included on one side. That is what the Chazon Ish held. So this is.
If that's true, then it wouldn't be the same day of Japan.
Yes. So apparently, I guess I was wondering about that myself. But apparently, there are parts of Japan that are even further west than that. I don't know exactly how that turned out, but there's an ocean in between. Japan, right. So in other words, he said that it only includes the landmass that Japan is, or if Lemos is saying that Japan is an island in and of itself, it's not contiguous to Russia, and therefore only Russia would be included, but Japan being a separate entity would be judged by where the line should be, and therefore Japan is west of the line.
What about Siberia?
That's what he said.
Are they including Siberia as part of Russia?
So including Siberia.
Okay, so now they're going all the way back.
In other words,
Siberia,
so I think it would come out according to that Siberia and Japan would be two different days. I think, according to that.
Well, if you move the line, then you're moving it basically.
They didn't draw a line like that on this map. That's true. But that's what he said. Okay. Now, life wouldn't be so bad if the Chazon Ish's opinion was accepted universally. But of course, in Klal Yisrael, why do that, right? It's always much better to have a machlokas, right? So therefore, we know that there were others who did not agree with the Chazon Ish, and in fact, their opinion predated the Chazon Ish, because as I mentioned earlier, the first recorded, the first point in history, in Jewish history, that this Shiloh was presented was earlier, was in the World War One era. In the World War One era, the Shiloh was presented by Jews also who fled Europe. And at that time, the Shiloh was asked to Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. The Chazon Ish at that time was still living in Europe. And one of the leading Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael of that time was a man by the name of Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky, who is known to us by his svarim that he wrote on the laws of Avelus called Gesher Achayim, very respected, well-known svarim. And Rabbi Tukhachinsky was one of the leading rabbis of Yerushalayim, did a great study into this, and he did not agree that that's where the line should be. And he based his feeling on the fact that there is a statement made in the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, in Maseches Sanhedrin, that the Gemara says that Yerushalayim is the center of the world. Yerushalayim is the center of the world. So that being the case, he said, well, if that's true, then if you lay out the if you take the globe of the world and lay it out flat, if Yerushalayim is in the center, it should come out that the day begins 12 hours, right, 12 hours east, and the day, I guess, 12 hours west is the beginning of the day, and 12 hours east is the end of the day, right? Which would mean, if you look here at the map, you see line E, which is Gesher Achayim, right? So Gesher Achayim's line is 12 zones past Eretz Yisrael, right? Because of the belief that Yerushalayim is the center of the world. What does it mean, the center of the world? Meaning that the center of the civilized world, when God created the world, the center of it was Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that was intended to be the center of the world. That's, I guess, where, you know, on the first day, that was the way the world spun. The center was considered Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, it stands to reason that 12 hours to the 12 hours east and 12 hours west is where the parameters are. And therefore, Rabbi Tukhachinsky, known by his Sefer Gesher Achayim, came up with the conclusion that the international time zone in Halacha is what is line E. Now, thus, we have two opinions. And the two opinions, there are Jews in between the two opinions who are going to have aggravation. Right, but not only that, right, meaning that a person now who wants to go for Pesach, they used to have kosher for Pesach hotels in Hawaii, or even if you some want to go to Hawaii on vacation, right, you're going to go to Honolulu on vacation, so now you have to ask yourself, when is Shabbos? And that question is going to be determined by what side of the line you're on. Now, if you're traveling from Miami to Honolulu, so if you look here at the map, you will see, right, that Hawaii is west of the Gesher Achayim's line, but it is east of the international secular line, and it is also east of the Chazon Ish's line. Okay, so therefore, on the day that is considered Saturday in Miami, that same day is going to be considered Saturday in Hawaii, because we're on the same side of the timeline. However, and according to the Chazon Ish, that day, whatever day would be Shabbos in Miami, will be Shabbos in Honolulu. However, according to Rav Tukhachinsky, according to the Gesher Achayim, that is not so, because you cross the line. Because in his view, the line is west of Miami, west of Hawaii. So therefore, when traveling from the United States to Hawaii, you are crossing over into a day later. So I remember my first or second year that I was here, I believe it was in the Pesach of 1998, I was teaching here at that time in the high school, and there was a young man in my class who told me, I asked him, so-and-so, it was approaching Pesach, it was a couple weeks before Pesach, I said, so-and-so, where are you going to be for Pesach? Where are you going to be for Yom Tov? So he said, well, my father got a position as a maitre d' in a kosher for Pesach hotel in Hawaii. Okay, so I was not aware of any of this at the time, so I didn't make anything of it. But this young man had an older brother who was learning in a different yeshiva, and he was more advanced in his learning, and somebody clued him into the fact that it's not so simple what Hawaii is considered. So basically, this was a shot, because he said, according to some poskim, right, the Hawaii is on the other side of the line. Now, when you deal with Pesach, what that means is that here this man was put in a situation where he is the person greeting all the guests as they roll in the cabs from the airport on Erev Pesach. But according to the Gesher HaChaim, Erev Pesach is Pesach. It's Pesach already, right? Because of the fact that you're on the other side of the line. So the question, that, whereas according to the Chazon Ish, Erev Pesach is Erev Pesach. So what do you do? So he called one of the leading poskim in America. He called, at the time, I believe he called Rav David Feinstein, who is definitely not an overly machner person, very grounded, very, pretty much in halacha, very balanced in halacha. And he was expecting to hear, oh, don't worry about it. And Rav David Feinstein said to him, well, I'll tell you the truth. If you want to take that job, you have to have 3 Pesach Sedarim. Okay? Right? Because of the fact that because when you get to Hawaii on what they consider to be Erev Pesach, according to the Gesher HaChaim, it's Pesach. So therefore, you have to stop eating chametz from a day before, and while the hotel staff is still pulling themselves together, you have to already stop eating chametz and make a Pesach Seder. And then the next night make a Pesach Seder, and then the next night make a Pesach Seder because maybe the Chazon Ish is right. This is what he was told. Now you will ask, so how come the hotel themselves did not do this? The hotel, it's not just him, that's what the hotel should have been. So the hotel, apparently, the people who ran the hotel, I don't think lately they've had in Hawaii for Pesach. I think because of the Shiloh that more people became aware of it. But I think in the days that they did have kosher for Pesach in Hawaii, they relied on the Chazon Ish's opinion. They relied on the Chazon Ish's opinion that Hawaii was on the same day as the continental United States, and therefore that's how they judged Pesach. But it's not clear. And there are many poskim, and in fact, there are many poskim that did not agree with the Chazon Ish. Now, to make matters even worse, there are yet others, we have here line D, where I don't know how they got this, but somehow there are others who determine that the halakhic line is in yet a third location. So obviously, this presents a nightmare for a person who is traveling in that direction. That person wants to stay there for Shabbos. So therefore, it would come out that simply stated, if you want to play it safe, and you want to go to Hawaii on vacation, the best idea would be to stay clear of Shabbos. Stay clear of Shabbos. In other words, go in the middle of the week, make sure you're out of there before it's possible that it could be construed as Shabbos by anyone's calculation, and that would be fine. However, you would have to be careful if you're going to fly out of there, on Motzei Shabbos, so then you could possibly have a situation that when you're flying back from Hawaii to the United States, when you cross the line going west to east, you're going back in time, so now you could be flying back into Shabbos. Right? So the problem is not just when Shabbos, the problem of when Shabbos is not just when to begin Shabbos, but when to end Shabbos, and it affects a lot of things. So therefore, if a person needed to go there, the best idea would be just stay clear. You'll say, well, why can't I just rely on one of the opinions? So I guess we would say, well, it's unclear. It's unclear. There's a very big question in the halacha where the line is, and therefore, why put yourself into that situation if you don't have to? There are other places in the world that a person can go on vacation. You don't have to go to Honolulu. So why don't you find a nice place in Mexico, which is clearly without any Shiloh, right? Or go somewhere in Europe, right? To Scandinavia. A lot of people go skiing in the Alps. A lot of places that a person could go that he will not have any problem. But if you're going to go into in the secular world, there's the Bermuda Triangle. So we can call this the halakhic Bermuda. It's not a triangle, but the halakhic Bermuda Triangle. Because when you're going in between, if you hold this map and you go between line B and line E, anywhere in those countries, you're getting into trouble. So I'll take a question. So why don't you go by what the local authorities have determined to be the day? So the truth is that's a good argument that was made actually in the old days. I don't know if it's still this way, but if back in the day, the famous Pesach book that is published every year by Rabbi Blumenkranz, he used to say that you should go by that there's Chabad in Hawaii, and therefore whatever they determine to be that's the Minhag HaMakom, and if that's the Minhag HaMakom, that's what you go by. Okay, but the question is, you know, whether that applies even for a Malacha D'Oraisa, and how much of a Makom is it? Just a few people that live there, does that constitute a Minhag HaMakom? So it's not such a simple matter. The reality is that Jews, you're right though, Jews who live in these places, there are Jews who live in these places, right? So they obviously have adapted a certain minhag. But if you don't live there and you're traveling there, and especially if you choose to travel there of your own free will, so then you're walking into a halachic shaila, which has a lot of ramifications. So therefore, it is advisable, right now today we have not just vacationing in Hawaii, but you have many Jews who go to the Orient to do business. You have many things that are manufactured in China. Okay, so China really is not a Shiloh, because if you look on the map, you'll see that China is west of the line according to everybody. Right. However, if it's made in Japan or other places like that, certain parts of Australia, right, that you could get into a situation where you have a real Shiloh. So therefore, so now the question is, so what does one do in such a case? Right? If you're going, if you have to go there, if your business takes you there, and you say, I have to go there, I have no choice, I have to go there. So what do I do? And if, let's say, so we'll say, all right, well, stay away from Shabbos, stay away from Pesach, right, that's for sure, right, stay away from any of those things, and you don't want to get into the whole kind of, stay away from any Jewish holiday, and no problem. But not always is that possible, right? Sometimes they have to go. We today benefit from the fact you can go into a store and buy kosher tuna fish, right? Where do you think that stuff comes from, right? That comes from a lot of these areas. Right, where do they catch those fish? So the mashkichim who work, right, who are with Mesiris Nefesh, fly to all these, godforsaken places on the earth, right, to supervise the kashrus, they're walking into these shalos. Right, so now, on a regular week, the kashrus organizations arrange that they shouldn't have to go for Shabbos. But we'll soon see that it's not only Shabbos where you get into this situation. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It goes all the way the line, the same to the Kesher HaMayim.
Yeah.
So if it goes all the way, that means anyone that goes even on a cruise to Alaska.
It seems that way.
Anyone that would go for like a week cruise to Alaska, that means theoretically they have to.
It seems that way. I mean, I certainly am not claiming to be the authority on this, and if you have this Shiloh, you best seek out your Rav and ask him, and it's a complicated thing, but it could be that would be a Shiloh. Yeah, it could be. That would be if a person is going to Shabbos.
Cruises to Alaska are only in the inside passage.
Okay.
To
the east of the line. Okay.
If you use the Chazanisha's Svara that you bend it across the line.
If the Gesher Chaim goes by that.
Gesher Chaim, I agree to that.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. Anything, as you can see, pretty much anything is possible. So therefore, you would really have to find this out. Now, yeah, go ahead. I just want to finish up. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's go back a little bit to the Torah, Bereshit.
Yes.
When Hashem said,
where
was he?
That, so the Gemara says that it seems that was in Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, shall we go by that?
Okay, so that's what the Gesher HaChaim said. That the Gesher HaChaim said, therefore, that's the smack in the center, and therefore 12 hours east and 12 hours west is where the line is. Right, but from the interpretation of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it seems that is not so. And the Baal HaMor is not the only one in the Rishonim who said it. There were other people who said it also, and people who adapted the Baal HaMor's opinion. So it is very, very unclear. Okay, so now let's just go through. So let's say this happened, what would you do? So now you get into the following Shiloh. If you're not sure, is today Shabbos or is today Friday? Like, for example, if you were traveling from, let's say you were going from America, right? Let's say you're going from Miami to Hawaii. So Yeshayahu would be, is today Sunday? In other words, Shabbos is either when they Saturday that they call is the same day that we call Saturday, right? The international line, that they are on the east of the international line, so therefore when it's Saturday by us, it's Saturday by them. However, according to the Geshur HaChaim, when it's Saturday by us, it is still Friday by them. Right? Excuse me, when it's Saturday by us, it's Sunday by them. Right? So the day that they consider Sunday would have to be observed as Shabbos, or do we say, according to the Chazon Ish, that the day that they consider Saturday would be Shabbos. So what do you do? So you'll say, well, abstain from Malacha for 48 hours. So that's not such a simple thing to do, but there's another, that's not the only halachic issue, because there's a consideration that during the weekdays you have to put on tefillin. Right? You have to put on tefillin every single weekday. So now the question, if you're going to say, well, I'll just observe 2 days of Shabbos l'chumrah, but that's only a chumrah as far as Shabbos is concerned, but what about tefillin? Tefillin is also a Torah law. And there you also have to be machmir. So now what do you do? Right, so you're going to say, if you're going to say, I'll be a tzaddik and I'll consider Shabbos here to be 48 hours. But that may not be a total tzidkis, because as far as the observance of Shabbos, that is correct. But as far as the observance of mitzvah tefillin, you just went a day and didn't put on tefillin. So what I saw, I don't know, I'm sure there are different opinions, but in the instructions that the Star K Kashrus organization gives to their people, they say, Rabbi Heinemann of Baltimore said that what you should do is that when you go by the majority of opinions, you go by the majority of opinions, and therefore, as far as the, when it comes to a Torah law, you have to be strict, even according to a minority opinion. So therefore, if, for example, you were going to Hawaii, so Hawaii is west of the Geshur HaChaim's line, but east of everyone else's line, okay, or so it appears. So therefore, the situation would be that he would say, as far as not doing malacha, so you could not do malacha, anything that is a malacha d'oraisa, anything that is Torah prohibited law, such as writing, such as cooking, etc., shaving, anything like that, so that you would have to be strict and you would have to observe 48 hours. However, when it comes to rabbinic law, such as muktzah, or other such things, anything that's prohibited by the rabbis, so there we could say suffit rabbanu l'kula, and then we would say that there you could go by the majority opinion, and I think it would come out then that Hawaii would be considered the same day that we're in Miami. But that would also mean, in other words, so when it's Saturday in Miami, it would be, according to most opinions, Saturday in Hawaii. So you would have to observe in Hawaii Saturday and Sunday as Shabbos, as far as not doing malacha. However, Sunday you would have to put on tefillin, because putting on tefillin is not a Torah violation of Shabbos. Right, it's not a malacha at all. Right, we don't put on tefillin on Shabbos for a different reason. But the fact of the matter is that tefillin you would have to put on Sunday. But all the while, you could not turn the lights on. You could not, you could not write anything, and so forth. That is what they are told. So clearly, if you don't, the best thing is stay away from it anytime it's pertaining to Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, there are other situations that apply with that dateline. So far, we've discussed with the questions that arise from the uncertainty as to where the dateline is. But let's just say for a minute now that we determine for sure where the dateline is. In other words, let's just say for a moment that the Mashiach will come and it will come clear that the Geshur HaChaim is correct. Okay? There are still more shailos that come up in halacha, even if you know where the line is. Such as, for example, let's say davening. So if a person gets on a plane and the various websites have this all mapped out, right? If a person has the following itinerary, they leave Los Angeles, okay, to fly to Tokyo, and they get on a flight, at 6 a.m. this morning. So the flight to Tokyo, according to what I saw, is a 12-hour flight, and Tokyo is 17-hour time difference. So when the person arrives, if he leaves Los Angeles at 6 a.m., he is going to be flying all through the day. It's going to be, because it's still day as he proceeds, and he's going to arrive in Tokyo on the next day at 11 a.m. Okay? On the next day at 11 a.m. because he crossed the line. But for him, the sun came up on Sunday and never went down. So let's say before he left Los Angeles, he davened Shabbos. So now he arrives in Tokyo, and it's Monday. So someone says to him, well, have you davened today? So the guy says, I think I did. He said, well, why do you think you did? Because you davened on this day in Los Angeles, which is true. However, on Los Angeles, when you davened, it was Sunday, right? The sun remained up throughout the trip, and now it's Monday. So on this day, as far as you're concerned, you davened, but as far as the sunrise and sunset, it's the same day. But on the calendar, it's a different day. So do you have to daven again or not? Right? That would be a shiloh. Does a person have to do that? Right? So what's that? Right. Well, I'm saying mincha eventually. No, the guy flying never had the opportunity to daven mincha yet. So his first opportunity to daven mincha is in Tokyo. So that's not the then already. He goes by the Tokyo time. But chakras, he davened already today. He davened already chakras. So he'll say, well, why should I daven again? On the other hand, they'll say to him, what are you talking about? You didn't daven on Monday. You davened chakras on Sunday. Today is Monday. You got to daven again.
He didn't daven mincha on Marav on Sunday.
He missed it. No, right. He missed Mincha Maariv on Sunday, but that's not his fault because he never had a chance. He never was in a situation that he had to have a mincha. In other words, there was no mincha by him, right? In other words, his day went from the morning of one day to the morning of the next day. So what do you do in a situation like that? Right? Similarly, you could have a situation where the guy went and he missed the day of Sphira, right? You could figure, if you get the itineraries from the airlines, you could have a situation that you could miss a chance to count the Sphira, or if you're flying from west to east, you could actually have a situation that you would be flying back into time. So now we would say, do you have to count Sphira again? You already counted this day. But you counted this day, in other words, in when it's the 30th day of the Omer in Tokyo, it's not the 30th day of the Omer in Los Angeles or in America, right? So when he's coming back, but he counted before he left Tokyo, he counted Sphira, now he comes back, and he flew back into time. So now the question is, so in order to fulfill the law that you have to count 49 consecutive days, do I have to count the Sphira on this day? You'll say, well, I can't allow 24 hours to pass without counting Sphira. On the other hand, but what Sphira should I count? I already counted this day. So what would be the point in counting it again? So even though it'll end up that I went a long stretch of time without counting the Sphira, but I didn't miss a day. Similarly, you could have with Hanukkah that a person could have flying west. You could have a person will miss an entire day of Hanukkah, right? Because the Hanukkah candles are lit at night, so therefore he could have a situation where before he left, he lit the third candle of Hanukkah, and he arrived on the morning of the fifth day of Hanukkah, and so forth. So there are many situations that come up. You don't need me to tell you that there is a machlokas in the poskim on every one of these situations. What you're supposed to do. So therefore, the purpose of the shiur is just to bring out the possible problems. Should this happen, anyone who finds himself in a situation that he needs to make this trip, some sort of trip going to the far west of where we are, where he's starting to cross into whatever can be construed as the line, right? So really, you'd have to sit down with a rav and ask him, what do I do? And being that it's my focus, obviously, you're going to hear different opinions from different people, so therefore you have to sit down with the person who you trust and say, okay, in your opinion, what should I do? In your opinion, what should I do? As far as the chakras question, there are those who say that you davened already, and there are other people who say, but you didn't daven on this day, right? With Sphira, when you fly back into time, there are those who say that even though you already counted this day, but since you went back into time, you should count the day again without a bracha, right? You have all these situations that come up. I'm sure now we could all dream of more halakhic questions that would arise. But this is the situation of the international dateline. Okay, the reality is that this was not a shaila 150 years ago. No Jews ever had these questions because it didn't happen. Jews didn't live in these places, and Jews didn't travel to these places. But in our world, in our modern world, a lot of these things come up, and should it happen, it would be best in advance, don't wait till you're on your way to the airport, right? But it would be, if you know this is coming, to check it out in advance when you're planning the trip, to take into consideration that after you get off the phone with the travel agent, you may want to get on the phone with your rabbi.